It's time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. Joining me shortly will be Todd Rosiak, Brewers Beat Reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Just wanted one quick note to throw out here. We did not know the outcome of Sunday's game. It was ongoing as we recorded this episode of Microbrew. So we do know now, of course, that the Brewers lost that game 3-0. What a tough showing again against left-handed pitching in this series. The Brewers are, I think, in really good shape to have come out with 2 wins and 3 tries against the Angels, facing only lefties. Ironically enough, Reed Detmers, the only one of the three who had like a decent ERA coming in to the weekend, is the one that the Brewers hit the hardest. Jose Suarez came in with an ERA over 10 and holds the Brewers obviously to no runs in the shutout on Sunday. On Monday, or I should say on Friday, the Brewers were able to win 2-1, even though Tyler Anderson kept them in check for most of the night. Got a late single from Rowdy Tellez in the 8th. So again, 2 out of 3. Homestand was a little bit of a downer, going 4-5 overall after they came off a 7-3 road trip out west. They, of course, now go back out west to face off with Colorado and San Francisco this week. But just wanted to throw that in there, that we now know the outcome of the game. Did not as we were having this conversation, so you can bear that in mind. All right, here's Todd Rosiak. So I guess, Todd, just if I'm being a little honest with you, I've kind of expected this team to backslide a little bit. I felt like some of the things were a little unsustainable that they were doing early in the season. And then they came home after a really great road trip. They lost 2 of 3 to Boston last weekend, and then 2 of 3 to Detroit. And I kind of thought maybe this was the beginning of it. It felt like things were teetering a little bit. And then they go and win the first two against the Angels. That's obviously a tiny sample, but I don't know. How do you feel about this Brewers team right now? Do you feel like this is one of the better teams in the National League? Because we're going to talk later about what's real, what's fake through 1 month of the season. But what, just in general, how do you feel about the Milwaukee Brewers thus far?
I have been greatly impressed overall, considering the injury problems that they've had, injury problems to expected huge contributors on the team. Remake of the bullpen, overhaul of the bullpen in the off season, the bullpen's been great. It's really been, to me, actually kind of remarkable considering all the moving pieces, and Corbin Burns not hitting his stride yet, they found a way to, you know, they found a way to put together a 7-3 road trip out west. Entering Sunday today, they had a chance to salvage a winning homestand, which didn't look like it was going to be possible after losing those series to Boston and Detroit. So overall, I would think fans should be quite pleased with the way things have played out. And, you know, as time goes on, Brewers will start getting more of these guys back. It sounds like Tyrone Taylor and Adrian Hauser are set to rejoin the team here on this next road trip, heading out to Colorado and San Francisco. That depth, no question, will be welcomed. Brandon Woodruff is quite a bit further out. Matt Arnold was on record today as saying probably sometime around the end of June is when they're looking at him rejoining the rotation. So the Brewers will have to figure out a way to keep things going without him in the rotation for that amount of time yet. But Garrett Mitchell being out too, in my opinion, the most exciting of the three young players that the Brewers have had in the lineup out for the year. Yet Joey Weimer has stepped in and done an admirable job in center. So just overall, guys have stepped up, done what they're supposed to do. And, the Brewers have forged a pretty darn good record moving ahead. So baseball happens. You're going to have series like they did against Boston, against Detroit. Going out west again, there are no guarantees. Those are always tough trips. But I would say for the first month of the season, all things considered, this has been a tremendous start for the Brewers.
Yeah, we know now, like you mentioned, Garrett Mitchell out for the season. He's going to have surgery to fix his shoulder and kind of an unfortunate bout of serendipity. Sal Frelick is out for a pretty good chunk of time too, like a 6-8 week window. And I know they're not like super concerned about it in terms of long-term health or whatever, but that obviously Sal Frelick would have been in play and would have probably offset whatever sort of, electricity lost, for lack of, I guess, a better term, with Garrett Mitchell. I have a hard time explaining Garrett Mitchell because I do think offensively I wouldn't classify him as special offensively by any stretch, at least not yet. He does bring speed. He does bring defense. We know those things are true. And this team values those things more than maybe previous Brewers teams have. But, you know, when he was here last year, when he came up, that brought something to the table that the Brewers had not had for a couple months. It was intangible. And they played played a lot better, quite honestly. And he seemed to come up with some big hits. And I don't know if what exactly can be attributed to him directly. But there is something that he brings that they will now be missing for this season. And I don't know if that's real. It might just be in my head. It might just be a small sample. It might be coincidence. But I don't even know how to explain it. I just feel like Garrett Mitchell makes this team better in ways that we don't even fully comprehend. How do you look at him? I mean, he's not one of their offensive juggernauts, for sure. But there's just something there when he's there, Todd.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. To me, he's an electric kind of player. He's quick twitch and capable of doing any number of things at any point in time. And like you said, he wasn't exactly tearing the cover off the ball. He hit three homers and, you know, in a 2-day span, he had that two homer game, had a walk off. You know, there's pop in his bat for sure. To me, I almost looked more forward to him coming to bat and drawing a walk and then seeing what he's going to do on the bases, because, I mean, it's just like automatic steal of second and potentially a steal of third after that. He can wreak havoc on the bases, and defensively really good too. Obviously, he's got tremendous range going both sides to left to right. He can go back on the ball, come in on the ball, and then he's got a plus throwing arm as well. So you put all those pieces together, and you've got a really good player. The injury that he suffered in Seattle, very fluky, you know, kind of it takes you back to the Jimmy Nelson 2017 at Wrigley Field. Just one of those things, like, I mean, you can't, it's instinctual. You're trying to get to the base. You can't avoid it. It's just a very fluky thing. But, you know, to me, I think it may be this may, looking ahead at his career, because he is so quick twitch, maybe this is something that is going to be part of his career, is just like, you know, leg injuries, nagging muscular injuries, that type of thing. I don't know. I don't have anything to base that on. It's just a guess. But I guess if there's any positive to come out of this, it's that the injury was to his left shoulder. He throws with his right arm. He's a left-handed hitter, so that's his back shoulder. All positives. So you figure, you know, he's going to miss the year. He's going to have surgery. He'll rehab hard. They'll have him on a good program. And, entering spring training next season, he should be next spring. He should be good to go. And you would think penciled back into that spot in center.
Yeah, injuries have just been part of his story since he was in the organization. So there is some track record there, I suppose. Real quick, I wanted to get your thoughts before I go further on talking some of these injuries. Shohei Ohtani was in town this weekend. He homered on Sunday, took Colin Ray deep early in that game, and he had a really good night Saturday, even though the Brewers were able to win that game. I was trying to remember the last time a visiting player was this exciting, came into Milwaukee, came into American Family Field. We're going to have probably, you know, the allure of seeing a player that you haven't seen in a while isn't going to happen that often with the balanced schedule. You're pretty much going to see every team at this point. So if there are players like this, they're going to come through Milwaukee at least every other year. Do you have any recollection of an opposing player kind of having that kind of buzz the way that Shohei Ohtani did when he came into Milwaukee this weekend?
I mean, probably Aaron Judge last year.
Oh yeah, that's a good call.
During the run to 60, but beyond him, not really. I mean, maybe back in at the end of Albert Pujols' tenure with the Cardinals. You know, there was some buzz around him, but I don't think anybody, you know, I would say Judge and Shohei Ohtani are the two biggest that I can remember. And, you know, the thing that stands out about Ohtani is just a tremendous cavalcade of Japanese media that follow him around everywhere, just to give people a little peek inside the press box. There is only one American reporter embedded with the Angels right now in Milwaukee.
No
Jeff
kidding.
Fletcher from the Orange County County Register. And I believe there's over 20 Japanese media there just following Ohtani, everything that he
wild.
Does.
That is
wild. Yeah.
And it's not like a pitcher where you only see him every few days. You know, he plays every day, so he's going to get that level of attention every day.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's just, you know, I don't know Saturday night, there's a giveaway on Saturday night. I worked that game. But 39,000 announced, and there was a buzz there for sure. And like I wrote after that game, it was a win-win for Brewer fans because the Brewers did hang on and win, but they also saw Trout crush two balls out of the ballpark, drive in all five of their runs, and Ohtani get three hits and really get robbed of getting on base again in that first inning with a good defensive play by Luke Voit. So it's just cool to see these kind of guys come into town. And like you mentioned, with the new scheduling, we'll start seeing them regularly every couple years in Milwaukee, which is a good thing for Brewers fans and a good thing for baseball in general, because it's happening all over baseball.
Yeah, he hit a moonshot in the I think a third or fourth inning of the game on Sunday. So fans got to see that in action as well. He did not pitch in the series, so they don't get to see the two-way prowess. But he'll be back. He'll be back in a couple years, presumably. Although who knows if he's playing with the Angels after this season? He might be back a lot sooner and a lot more regularly. Not sure how that'll go just yet. Okay, you mentioned Tyrone Taylor in the outfield picture in general without Garrett Mitchell. Taylor on the cusp of returning, it sounds like, and they could certainly use some bodies in the outfield, but I'd be curious to know how you think this stacks up exactly. I think Joey Weimer has probably got to be your center fielder. The defense that he brings is just a little bit too invaluable, especially if you don't have Mitchell. And so I presume, I mean, Tyrone Taylor is your starting right fielder, at least to start with, but I don't really know how it shakes out or how you imagine it shakes out. Maybe he's not Tyrone Taylor. Maybe he's not a regular going, right out of the gate. What is your understanding of how that picture is going to look once he's back?
We don't really know either, but the good thing is that both Weimer and Taylor can play both center and right. And I would expect, at least in the early going, there might be a little bit of shifting back and forth between the two. But Joey Weimer's just been tremendous out in center. And we were talking with Craig Counsell about it before the game on Saturday. And when you look at what the Brewers' depth chart in center field was going into spring training, Joey Weimer was fourth, maybe lower, because you were expecting Garrett Mitchell. You've got Tyrone Taylor in the mix. And then just based off of, what had the minors, Sal Frelick would have been ahead of Weimer. Yet there he is out in center, running balls down, making diving catches, crashing into the wall, doing all those things, and with an incredible throwing arm as well. And he still has not even scratched the surface on what he can do at the plate yet. He's hit a couple of opposite field homers, scuffling around in the 220s. It may be a little bit yet before he becomes a impact player offensively, but to me, he's absolutely worth running out there every day just because of his defense. So, Tyrone Taylor, he brings some pop, obviously brings more experience. He's another guy that can run out there. So just it's good to get him back, good to get some more outfield depth because they've really been lacking in that. And then it allows you to move Brian Anderson over to allow him to play third base pretty much every day, which is a good thing as well. And that's no knock against what he's done in right field today because he's been really good. But that just strengthens your overall defense on the infield. Having him out there every day, and Mike Brasso is really best suited to be a reserve, pinch hitter, guy who can fill in here and there every so often. But running him out to third base multiple days a week really is not, it's not going to help the team overall, in the big picture. So again, just getting those guys back, getting them healthy, and hopefully Tyrone Taylor can stay healthy. I think it's going to be a good addition for him.
Adrian Hauser, same thing. He's just got a few days left here where I think before we'll see him back on the big league roster. Was looking like a reliever coming out of camp before he suffered a groin injury that's held him back since then. But I think it looks like the way they're stretching him out, they expect him to start here with the Brewers. I think that's probably just Colin Ray's spot. Colin Ray's been, I think, as good as you could hope for, but probably if they have their druthers, he's not a starter in this rotation. Obviously with injuries and whatnot, they have to lean on some new faces. But I'm guessing Adrian Hauser just takes his spot in the rotation, but I could be convinced otherwise. How do you think things play out for him?
Yeah, I think that would be my guess as well. Colin Ray was really good in his first start in San Diego, and since then has been, I would say serviceable. He's been this year's Jason Alexander, but to a smaller degree, a lesser degree, hasn't had as many opportunities. So, the Brewers pretty much know what they're getting in Adrian Hauser. He's familiar with Victor Caratini, and everybody else knows what he can do. Ground ball guy. Did not have a great year last year, but I think that comfort level is there, and you definitely do like the experience. So to me, that's an easy plug and play. And then, you see what happens with Colin Ray from there. Maybe he goes back to Nashville. Maybe they figure out a way to fit him in the bullpen somewhere. But with the length being covered largely by Bryce Wilson, who's done a really good job out there as well, tough to say. So remains to be seen, but I would expect to see Adrian Hauser in the rotation here shortly.
Yeah, they've gotten a lot out of Bryce Wilson as sort of that long relief, that very reliable long relief at this point. Maybe that's sort of the Brent Suter role, right-handed Brent Suter. I don't quite know if it's the same, but they've gotten a lot out of him. They also picked up Trevor McGill from the Minnesota Twins in a sort of minor trade, sent him to AAA. I don't expect we'll see McGill in the near future, but I expect he starts for the Milwaukee Brewers at some point this season. So they do. They continue to collect options here to try to get through the course of this entire season. Brandon Woodruff, like you said, not back until the end of June. That's a good thing, but still, obviously, two more months without him is going to be a tough. That's tough. You can't replace that level of pitching excellence. Last thing before we get to sort of real or not through the first month of the season, Keston Hira is mashing the ball at AAA Nashville. This is a story we have told many times before. This is a guy who just really, really crushes the ball in the minors and can't seem to translate that to the major leagues. So obviously they've been in this situation before. He's no longer on the 40-man roster. And we've talked about how he doesn't really have a position that he thrives at. So he's more of a DH type. Brewers have a couple of those. It's not an obvious fit that Keston Hira will play again for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's got 9 home runs. Strikeout rate is down a little bit. It's certainly reasonable, but he's played in the minors and had a reasonable strikeout rate before. I think it's like 26% right now, which is high, but not astronomically so like it was for Hira at the big league level and in spring training. I guess my question here is there any scenario where Keston Hira winds up back on this big league team and even producing? I mean, I've told Kurt, one of my preseason predictions is that at some point, once I knew Hira was going to stay in the organization, at some point he will have a big hit for the Milwaukee Brewers this year. I don't know if that's true because it just doesn't, there's just no clear-cut pathway to that. But man, I just don't know what you do with a guy who so clearly dominates at AAA and yet has struggled in the big leagues. Like, it's just wild to me that there just aren't many guys that are in. I know there are quad A players as a concept, but Keston Hira is so good at AAA. It's really baffling to me, Todd. I don't know what to do with a guy like that.
Yeah, I think there are multiple other dominoes that would need to fall at the big league level for the Brewers before he is considered. But I think you hit right on it, JR. I was going to say the same thing. Maybe he is just a classic 4A player. And, once he gets to the big leagues, it just winds up being too big of a jump pitching-wise. We saw what he could do in 2019, but has not really come close to matching that since. He's just never been able to get a handle on the strikeouts. So, maybe he continues to mash at AAA in Nashville. And, some team needs some pop in its lineup. All of a sudden, it's like, hey, maybe we could swing a trade for him and bring him on board and they could make a difference for us. You don't know. So it's definitely a good problem to have as far as the Brewers are concerned. Let them stay down there, get them, keep them comfortable, let them keep hitting homers and see what happens. Maybe he winds up becoming a trade deadline piece. Maybe he goes before that, but it's just been very interesting to kind of follow his journey through the Brewers organization since he broke in 2019, drafted in 2017, was expected to be a foundational piece along with Christian Yelich. And here we are, and neither one of those guys are what you would call foundational pieces. So funny how baseball works sometimes.
All right, now we've got 1 month of the season down, 5 months to go. And so just a few quick hitters, real or not situations, whether or not we think that this is a real thing through 1 month or just small sample size or bound to turn the page at some point. So I'm gonna throw these at you real quick. First of all, Wade Miley. Is he going to be the All-Star representative? I made that joke last week, and after yet another great outing from Wade Miley, I'm not sure it's a joke. I feel like you look at the roster, and he's like the obvious all-star at this point, which is, I realize that sounds ridiculous, but is Wade Miley, is he going to be the all-star this year, Todd?
A lot of time to go yet, JR. Maybe slow the roll a little bit, but he's been so fun to watch. Brandon Woodruff calls him the old mule, Wade Miley, and it's just a great to me. It's kind of a backhanded compliment, or a joke, whatever you want to call it. Just referring to his age, but his stubbornness, his wiliness, I think, on the mound. It's been a joy to behold. The guy just knows how to pitch and gets it done each time out. And, I think hat tip goes to Matt Arnold for those two under-the-radar signings he made in the offseason. You know, the Brewers fans complained about not spending money. So far, Wade Miley and Brian Anderson have just been incredible signings at incredible prices. So, obviously Wade Miley's got to continue to stay healthy. He's got to continue to perform. But what a story that would be, wouldn't it? If Wade Miley did wind up being the Brewers' lone all-star, or even just making the all-star game in general. So, maybe Devin Williams or something like that just would be very cool to see. 36 years old and looks in better shape than he did this first time with the Brewers.
He
lighter.
Does. Yeah.
Definitely lighter. And just brings that presence to the clubhouse. You can see when he's around, guys want to be around him, and guys want to soak up what he brings. And he's just such an affable personality. He's funny. He's fun. He's engaging. He's a guy definitely that I think the Brewers could have used last year. When things started going off the rails, a guy that can draw on that experience and kind of bring guys together. Above and beyond what he does on the mound for the Brewers, that close presence has been invaluable.
Yeah, I don't want to imply that the Brewers would have only one All-Star, especially if they continue to play this well. They will certainly have more than one, but Wade Miley's going to be in that mix at this rate. But yes, it's very early, and I'm sure there will be some starts where he gets hit around a little bit. But guy throwing less than 90 miles an hour, getting the job done. All right, next one. There are some metrics that will tell you the Brewers have the best defense in baseball. And at the very least, it's a top-5 defense. Do you think that will continue? Do you think this team is really built to have one of the best defenses throughout the course of the season?
I don't really see much of a drop-off unless the Brewers start having more injury problems. Hopefully not for their sake, but, let's just take a quick spin around the diamond. William Contreras, Victor Caratini, both been tremendous behind the plate, calling games defensively, and maybe most importantly, the pitch framing. Phenomenal. Rowdy Tellez, Luke Voit, holding their own at first base. Bryce Terang, tremendous range at second base.
That's a Gold Glover right there. He's going to win a Gold Glover in his career.
More than enough throwing arm over there. It's just been really eye-opening watching him compared to what we had seen with Colton Wong the previous 2 years. And we're talking about, a former Gold Glover. Granted, Colton Wong was nowhere near that last year. But just the size, the range, the quickness that Terang has over there, it's been remarkable. Willie Adames has continued, improving defensively. He had a career year last year at shortstop, and certainly has not taken a step back there this year. And, Brian Anderson, when he's been at third base, he's been a vacuum. Plus, he's got, I would almost say, a Ken Caminiti kind of throwing arm over there. Just tremendous throwing arm. Look in the outfield. Craig Counsell has been effusive in his praise of Christian Yelich, who looks rejuvenated out there. His arm is what it is. It's not strong, but it's accurate at the very least. So if the guy can't throw hard, at least he can hit cutoffs, and that's what he does. But he's also getting the balls, and that one that he ran down on Saturday night in left center was a very important play in the middle of that game. Joey Weimer, we've talked about, tremendous in the center field. And then, whoever's been trotted out in right field, there's been some ups and downs. But overall, you look at that unit from top to bottom, very, very good. And I think it's only going to get better once you start getting some of these injured guys back, including Tyrone Taylor, who's a very good glove himself.
Yeah, Christian Yelich's arm, not great, but it is better than last year, which I don't know. I couldn't possibly seen that coming. Like you said, defensively, he has been better. And yeah, they're getting production from all those spots that you mentioned. William Contreras is just stealing strikes. Caratini too, left and right. They are just stealing. Their framing is out of this world. And it's certainly working for the Brewers pitching staff. But I am going to ask about Yelich's offense. Now, even when Yelich was, it's well documented how he's fallen off. He's still, though, according to OPS Plus, for example, he's still been above average, even if just a little above average offensively, every year he's been with the Brewers. Not this year. This year, the numbers have actually torpedoed pretty badly, and it's just 1 month. But I wonder if you think the Yelich offense, that the struggles he's had on offense will continue, that if this will indeed be his worst year yet, or if there's still hope that he can recover at least to the level that he was the past couple years.
I mean, it's still early. There's certainly more than enough time for him to get into a hot streak. But you look at the numbers overall right now, entering, including this part of Sunday's game, 223 average, three homers, 11 RBI, 316 on base, 656 OPS. They're not pretty. 34 strikeouts, leads the team. To me, that I think that's kind of been the biggest thing is the strikeouts are so high and the really walks high. Are down quite a bit. Yeah. He's always had a very good eye and has always been very patient at the plate. It seems like he's been a little bit more impatient this year, maybe trying to make things happen a little bit too hard. And again, a lot of ground balls to the right side. That's what we've been seeing. So it's the age-old question. Unfortunately, I don't have any answers. I can only guess like everybody else, but there's still a long time to go, and I would be willing to bet that by the end of the season, if he stays healthy, plays 150 games or so, at the very least, his numbers will be right around where they were last year. Is that worth $26 million a year? Absolutely not. But at this point, it is what it is, and I think you just kind of have to, adjust your expectations accordingly.
All right. We also mentioned Bryce Turang and Joey Weimer a couple times and how valuable they are on defense. Offensively, you're not seeing it yet. You may eventually, certainly Joey Weimer, I think especially, has shown signs that he could get hot and become a major difference maker in the lineup. But I wonder, like, in the light of Taylor coming back, kind of going back to that question and just where their offense is at, do you think they stay on this roster all year long, or will there be a period of time where they do have to go back to AAA to sort of get things back up to speed offensively?
I think that the value that they bring defensively is strong enough that unless there were some other mitigating factors or either one of them got into such a bad offensive rut that there was no other alternative than to send them down to kind of get their stroke back, I don't see any reason why you would send them down at this point. They've got they're logging valuable plate appearances. We've talked about the defense. It seems like the veteran guys almost rally around them. It's been interesting hearing all the older guys talking about the energy and the enthusiasm that these young guys bring, and the impact they can make on the bases. They can win games in other ways than just with their bats. So, that said, we can never predict the future. There could be some crazy things that happen, but just based off of the way, things are shaking out at this point and the amount of value that they bring across the board, I would expect both of these guys to be, long timers here.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a really good point about what they bring to that clubhouse, which, we talked about a lot about 2022. There was something missing last year. And I don't know if, a bunch of rookies were really the solution, but at least in the short term, they kind of have been. And especially losing Mitchell, there's an intangible quality there. And this team is just committed to defense. And that has borne out nicely. And also the way that the new shift rules work, it feels like there's more emphasis there across the league, and the Brewers maybe were a little ahead of the curve on that. So I agree with you. I at this point, I don't know what scenario would have to transpire for either of those guys to go down, even for a short time. Last one right now, Pittsburgh is the best team in the National League. No one expects that to happen all year long, but the question would be, can they actually compete for the National League Central? Can they be a force all year long? Also on the other side of the coin, St. Louis having a horrendous start to the year. Again, I don't expect that to be the case all year long, but there are enough questions about St. Louis where I'm not positive that they're going to get back in and become like the team to beat in the NL Central. So Pittsburgh, St. Louis, Pittsburgh at the top, St. Louis at the bottom. Is that possibly something that we could see all year long?
Just as I predicted, going into spring training, I knew the Pirates were going to win the Central.
We all knew this.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was just talking about this yesterday at the ballpark. Is this going to last? I don't think there's any way it's going to last. I mean, the Pirates are playing incredibly inspired baseball. Andrew McCutchen has rediscovered the fountain of youth, and Drew Maggi has been the darling of baseball since being called up at age 33. And they're getting really good pitching. They've re-signed Brian Reynolds to a long-term extension. I think it's just a cool story for baseball and good for Pirates fans, having gone to Pittsburgh for how many times since I've been covering the Brewers. And I can't even tell you the amount of conversations I've had with Uber drivers, taxi drivers, servers at restaurants who just all had given up on the Pirates and just, they wouldn't spend money. They're just disgusted with the team. There's some excitement there, and it's good. It's good for them. It's good for baseball, and good for Bob Nutting to finally step up to the plate a little bit and start spending some money and showing some investment in that team. Is that going to last over the long term this season? I doubt it. They're off to a great start. As we keep saying, there's a really long way to go. On the flip side of that coin, are the St. Louis Cardinals going to continue to scuffle and finish in last place in the Central? Absolutely not. I'm sure all Brewers fans are loving it right now, and it sounds like there's all kinds of internal turmoil and strife and everything going on. Maybe Ole Marmol could be in danger as the manager, and all these other things that are happening. Watch in August, what's going to happen? They're going to go on some incredible tear. They're going to win 17 games in a row. Goldschmidt and Arenado will both hit 400 for the month. It's just the Cardinal way, as we always like to say. They'll be in the thick of it at the end. But just to see that narrative change there, where it's always so positive, and the expectation is that at the very least they're going to make the playoffs. And if they don't get to the World Series, it's a huge disappointment. It's been very interesting to see that flip and, see the Cardinals faithful kind of turn on that team a little bit. So just kind of a cool little first month postscript. Cubs have been playing, well, probably better than expected. Cody Bellinger's proved out to be a really good signing for them so far. He's starting to hit for more power, with more consistency. Really the only team that hasn't made any kind of noise or anything or has been really what has been expected has been the Reds, kind of same old Reds. Joey Votto's still hurt and not ready to come back. And, they're shuffling guys back and forth from the minors to the majors and injuries and all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely been a interesting first month overall in the Central.
Yeah, I think if I were asked this question, which one is more likely, I would say it's more likely the Cardinals finish near the back the way that they've played. Just some really questionable decisions. I think the Tyler O'Neill thing is weird. Sending Jordan Walker down. It's just weird over there. I think the Pirates are overperforming by miles. I think Jack Sawinski is real. I think there are a lot of Pirates fans who would say Bob Nutting could stand to spend way, way more, even though they did do this extension for Brian Reynolds. But the vibes right now in Pittsburgh seem to be immaculate. I don't know how far that can carry you through a six-month season, but like you said, it's a fun story, and it's cool that they're doing all right. The Brewers don't see them until June, I believe. So that's an unusual the function of the new schedule. So we will see. All right, let's go to three up, three down, looking at some more of the more granular details from the week. Here we go. Todd, I'm going to start with this thing that they busted out Friday at American Family Field. Beat the cheese. It was a one-time celebration. I think it's just a one-off for Wisconsin Day. But a riff on the Beat the Freeze. The Atlanta Braves famously do this promotion where regular fans try to beat the freeze, who's a basically an Olympic level sprinter who wins the vast majority of the time on a race over the outfield warning track. The Brewers did something very similar with a person dressed as a giant wedge of cheese. The setup was sort of predetermined. The guy that was racing the cheese fell down, but it was funny. I wasn't there. It seemed kind of weird, to be honest, but I don't know if maybe it played a little better in the room. Interesting move. Wouldn't have been my choice, but as a one-off, it's fine. It's cool. A little different. Brewers trying a lot of things this year. I gotta hand it to them. They're thinking a little bit outside the box, trying to be funny. Some of it works, some of it doesn't, but that was certainly a surprise on Friday night against the Angels.
I can pull some strings, GR. Do you think you could race the cheese if we could bring that cheese block back for another game?
I have no doubt in my mind that somebody dressed as a giant foam wedge of cheese could beat me in a foot race, especially if we're going beyond like 200 meters, because at that point my body just gives out on me. That's a tough ask for this particular human temple.
I just, you know, to kind of rip off of that a little bit, I have been in I have seen Beat the Freeze in person in Atlanta a bunch of times, and that is really fun. The crowd really gets into it, and 99% of the time the Freeze will smoke whoever is racing. But I have seen one where the guy beat the Freeze, and it was like, oh my god, that's crazy. They get the normal mortals do get a pretty big head start. The Freeze is generally like a track star, like a college track star or something like that, wearing that suit. But just the fans get involved. It's something to see. And, you know, obviously fans get very excited about the sausage race in Milwaukee. This is just a whole different level to me. And it's an actual contest. You know, like, I know the sausages are racing, but they're not really running full speed. This is like an actual athletic endeavor, and to see a fan sometimes beat this track star is really, really funny and entertaining. And I know we've seen it in the past kind of on ESPN and such, but to see it in person is definitely fun.
All right, let's keep with the cheese theme then for my number two. It's saying farewell to Miguel Cabrera, the Detroit Tigers slugger who's been with the Marlins, the Tigers, had a tremendous career. It's his last year, and the Tigers were in town. And on Wednesday, the Brewers gave him a send-off. They donated to his charity. They have gave him a cheese head, of course, which is a popular item in the Brewers dugout this year. And then they also gave him a Harley Davidson jacket with some cool patches on it that sort of commemorate some of his career achievements, like 3,000 hits. And really cool. He's a really cool guy. I've followed the Tigers a fair amount, have some Tiger fandom in my extended family. And so when they were really, really good, back when they made the World Series a couple times, he was a special player to watch. And he hasn't been that for a few years, but it was cool to see him get a send-off. He seemed genuinely delighted, which I thought was also kind of cool, because I'm sure he's getting send-offs from just about every stadium he visits. So that was neat, and really enjoyed watching him play. Triple Crown winner. I'm very, very happy to have witnessed the bulk of his career, and it was cool to see him get that send-off.
Yeah, I would agree. I was there that game Wednesday, and he just seems like he's really enjoying his last time around the majors, and good for him. He's been great for baseball. Great guy by all accounts, and good on the Brewers for sending him out. One of my up-downs would be from last Sunday. I'm sure people don't really want to remember it, but the Matt Bush, Javi Guerra blow-up that sealed their fate in that series against the Red Sox. That was about as ugly an inning as you're ever going to see. 9 runs scored by the Red Sox, 12-5 win. We find out after the game or the next day that Matt Bush is on the IL with rotator cuff issue, and wave goodbye to Javi Guerra, who has since landed with the Tampa Bay Rays after clearing waivers. He was traded back to the team that the Brewers acquired him from. I joked with Craig Council yesterday and said maybe the Brewers can get Victor Castaneda back from the Rays, and in that way, like the trade never even happens. I fully expect to see Javi Guerra strike out the side when the Brewers visit Tampa in a couple of weeks. Somehow they'll figure it out. And, like that magic juju that they put on all their pitchers, they all somehow turn out to be Cy Young Award winners or whatever the case may be. But there's going to be a chance that we will see Javi Guerra pitching against the Brewers here in a couple of weeks when the Brewers go down to Tampa.
Yeah, and it's always a little nerve-wracking because the Rays have such a good track record with pitchers. It's always nerve-wracking when they pick up a guy, even if this is a guy they just gave up. Like, it feels like they know something that the Brewers don't. It did not come together for Guerra in his short stint here. Kurt kind of hinted at this. I don't think he meant that he had inside info to suggest that Guerra would be sent away, but he's like, yeah, I think his days are numbered with the Brewers, and they were so numbered that we didn't even get 24 hours before that podcast landed, and they had decided to move on from Javier Guerra. There's no real track record there of success at the big league level, so I think it just isn't going to happen. And then Matt Bush, I don't know if that's an injury, you know, a real life injury. If it is, it's obviously a big deal. Rotator cuff stuff is nothing to, you know, sneeze at. Or if it's just he's struggling and they need to get him a break. Either way, the Brewers really could use him. I mean, this bullpen, I feel like they've been so good, but I just wonder how long it's sustainable, given that they don't strike out a lot of guys, given that they kind of are relying on this defense. I feel like at some point it comes to roost. They could definitely use Matt Bush back and healthy, but he just has not been sharp this year and continuing some of the problems he had last year. Okay, so for me, we'll move into some crazy good defense that we saw over the, you know, we've seen it all year, but Luke Voit, I don't know if that's somebody we think of when we think of the defensive performance, but he really saved the day on Saturday, or I should say Friday, in a 2-1 win over the Angels. He made a diving play on a throw to first base from Mike Brasso in the eighth inning to end the inning. If the play is not made, a run scores and the game's tied. Mike Brasso's had a couple adventures with his throwing arm over the years, and there were a couple throws in that inning in particular that were not great. One was an error, and one was that play where Luke Voit just made an incredible diving play. Several diving plays from Luke Voit this week. He has been really, really good on defense. Offensively, Luke Voit's really, really in a rut, really struggling, had a really bad at-bat in the early going of Sunday's game. So, you know, it's a mixed bag, but he's been good. We had a diving Joey Weimer catch on Saturday. I think there was a diving Joey Weimer catch on Friday, or at least a really good Weimer catch. The guy has been making those plays all week long. We've already talked about those, but yeah, Luke Voit showing some leather on defense and saving the day for the Brewers.
We saw the Brewers' first two ejections on Saturday night. Craig Counsell with his 26th in his career, getting into the face of the home plate umpire, Adam Beck, young guy, first year as a full-timer in the majors. And then not long thereafter, we saw Willie Adames ejected for the first time in his career. So it was kind of a dust-up over a sequence where Willie Adames was in the box, thought he called timeout, umpire didn't grant it, umpire called the pitch a strike, the pitch was not a strike, and then as Willie's trying to talk to the umpire about it, the umpire assesses another strike because of the pitch clock violation, and then Craig Counsell comes out, gives the umpire a piece of his mind, is ejected, Willie gets back in the box, swings and misses at that pitch, strike three, and then Willie lets loose on the umpire. He's ejected, and off we go. Willie was not in the clubhouse after the game, so we didn't get a chance to ask him about it. I'm assuming he would have been very contrite and apologetic and everything. That's not something he would normally take pride in, but at the same time, I think he definitely did have a gripe, and you know, Craig Counsell asked him about it, and he did bring up the fact you know, that pitch that was called a strike should not have been a strike, and it just kind of went off the rails from there. So, you know, we all know Craig Counsell gets his money's worth more often than not when he gets thrown out, and that was definitely another one of those situations there on Saturday night.
Yeah, that didn't end up costing them in the game, although with Mike Trout's two homers, the Angels came back a little bit, made things a little nerve-wracking. Willie Adames, so affable. He's not going to get thrown out unless he really feels like he was wronged. And like Craig Counsell said, felt like there should have been some time allowed for Adames to have a conversation with Adam Beck. Adam Beck, like you said, new umpire. I mean, he was terrible. Adam Beck was awful on Saturday night. He was awful in the Brewers' favor in many cases. I mean, Victor Caratini was stealing strikes that were way, way below the strike zone. You gotta just manage that better, and that's something that'll come with time. And rookie guy, like, whatever, it happens. But not a good night for the home plate umpire, and some ejections resulting from that. A couple other things that we did not mention in 3 Up, 3 Down. We saw Bryce Terang play at shortstop for the first time. Actually, in that game, he had to fill in for Adames, but Terang played shortstop earlier in the week against the Tigers. We know he's capable of doing that, so it was interesting to see him out there. I believe that was the first time this year, earlier this week, when he played shortstop instead of second base. We did have, I feel like there was one more thing I wanted to mention, but I'm not sure. Not sure I have it written down. So I guess not. That's it. That's what we got for three up, three down. Let's move now to a look at the Brewers' past. It's Remember When. All right, for this, Todd, I'm going back to July 20th, 1997. The Brewers were not great, although I think they were okay that year, at least for a part of the year. But this is an ESPN Sunday Night Baseball broadcast where a guy by the name of Hideki Arabu is pitching for the New York Yankees, another Japanese superstar with a ton of fanfare, a ton of Japanese media following him to Milwaukee. This was his third start with the Yankees. Obviously, Shohei Ohtani kind of fitting the bill this time around. But back then, Hideki Arabu was the buzz of Major League Baseball. He was not by any means the first Japanese player to play in the big leagues. Hideo Nomo had just come through, but this was kind of going to be the next big thing. The Japanese Nolan Ryan was thrown around for him. Bigger guy. He had San Diego. Originally, the Padres had the rights to him, did not want to play for San Diego. And so the Yankees kind of paid a fortune, traded to get those rights and bring Hideki Arabu to Major League Baseball. So he starts for the Yankees. 51,000 plus come out to see him in his debut in New York. His first outing's okay. His second outing, not very good, but they won both of them. And so that brings up this third outing in Milwaukee. On Sunday night, I was there in the stands as a young fan, so I remember it. I do have some vague recollections of it. Hideki Arabu was not good. He gave up 6 runs on 7 hits in 6 innings. Dave Nilsson hit a home run, which I remember very well. Jeff Cirillo had a 2-run single, and Scott Carl threw a complete game as the Brewers won that game handily. He moved to 4-10 on the year. So Scott Carl ends up shining on ESPN Baseball, Sunday Night Baseball, which was sort of funny. I mean, Scott Carl, a productive career for the Brewers as Brewers pitchers go, but that was not a good time for Milwaukee Brewers baseball. And I think he was kind of the best of what was around at the time. But yeah, that was certainly an unusual moment with the spotlight on Milwaukee for one of its visiting players. Hideki Arabu had kind of an interesting life in general. He did not know his father for the longest time. His father was an American serviceman who he did end up meeting later in his life. Didn't cultivate a massive relationship with him, but that was sort of added some mystery and intrigue to his upbringing, his background. And unfortunately, his life ended very sadly in 2011, where it's unclear exactly what happened, but it was reported that he took his own life, but in any event, died at his home in California. And so he never really latched on as a star. He won 2 World Series titles, and he had a couple good years, but he was never really great. He wasn't the player that they wanted him to be for the money they paid for him. And so he was ultimately disappointing and kind of just a tragic ending to his story. But I do remember back in 97 when he was all the rage and happened to intersect with a game at Milwaukee County Stadium on Sunday night. Okay, that's our look at the past. Now we close this down the best way we can with Todd's Take of the Week.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep. Get out of here. Gone for Ryan Braun. He just hit a walk-off home.
Todd, what do you got for us?
I was looking at the schedule moving forward, and the Brewers are playing 3 at Colorado, 3 at San Francisco, and after that, their West Coast travel is basically done, which is very weird for scheduling purposes. They play one series in Los Angeles, August 15th, 16th, and 17th at the Dodgers.
Okay.
That's in between a 3-game series at the White Sox and a 3-game series at the Rangers. I'm sorry, but it's just strange to me that they had all that West Coast travel stacked out in front this year and well before the All-Star break, if that. So, not many late night TV viewing opportunities for Brewer fans to enjoy doing that. I know sometimes I do, and I'm not on the trip, but. Yeah, just kind of a little scheduling quirk that jumped out at me. And in Colorado, we'll see how many times the Brewers face the Raptor. Old friend Brent Suter is pitching out of the bullpen for them. Also, former Brewer legend Dennelson Lamet. Everybody who was all up in arms about the Brewers giving up Dennelson Lamet. The last time I checked, his ERA was over 8. So we'll see how old Dennelson does against the Brewers if he's pitching or even on the team at that point.
Brewers legend Nelson Lamet. Big outing for Eric Lauer coming up in Colorado. I think that's a tough for any lefty to come in there and try to do work against a team that can, you know, just by the nature of where they play, mash home runs pretty much all the time. So this will be a big outing for him. He's been up and down a little bit. He's had some great outing and then some uneven ones. So including one this week. So I'm curious to see how that one goes. Todd will not be. I believe. Are you on the West Coast trip at all, or is just Kurt headed out there?
Just Kurt. Since I fell on the sword the last trip, Kurt gets his first trips. First trips to Colorado and San Francisco.
Very good. So follow Kurt Hogue for all of the action at jsonline.com. He'll be there on the this West Coast swing, and then the Brewers will be headed back home. So this one won't be quite as long as the last trip, the 3-series road trip, but we do have some late nights coming up. He is Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thank you for joining us, Todd. He, of course, has everything at jsonline.com as well. We'll catch you again real soon, my friend.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. I know. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you think. You can find me or Todd on Twitter. Thanks for joining us on Microbrew. We will chat again very soon. Bye-bye.